Good morning.
Hey.
Hello, I'm Justin, and I'm ready.
Is that your American, Justin?
I've been practicing my accent all week. Yeah.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. At first, I didn't even hear it. I was just like, oh, yeah, it's normal. And then I was like, wait.
I don't know what that was. I just rolled out of bed. And hi. How are you?
Hi. doing better. Had a good sales morning, so
nice.
No complaints then. Had some good time to, I don't know what else to say, but think. And that's a nice change of being able to, like, I don't even know. Like, just,
what are you thinking about?
Have more than 20 minutes at a time to, like, process and, like, I guess you'd call it, like, deep work or something, yeah. Where, like, you can think, you can work on some, like, I was changing some code on the website. There's a problem that kind of always frustrated me with one of the fill out forms we use for product questions. It's a little form that you can, like, type a question and then it emails it to us. Right. It's just a simple thing. It's pretty effective. We get, like, quite a few questions through that, and it never would send us what the customer was looking at. And so we get this question, be like, does this work with, you know, my CNC router? And I'd be like, what work? You know, I always, like, feel bad because it's like, I should have figured that out for them, you know? And they're like, oh, I thought you would have had that information. And I was like, no, it's just an agnostic form. So I figured that out this week. So it sends me what product they're looking at.
Is this in the chat function or a separate thing?
We got rid of the chat. That was useless. Not useless. It just wasn't working well for us. So this is just on any of our product pages, there's a yellow button that says got questions, and it pops out a fill out embedded form,
okay,
which then turns into an Airtable, which automates to send them and us an email, and then we reply to them.
Oh,
and it's just an email.
Cool.
At that point.
Okay. So the little help button, that's not chat. That's like a searching a knowledge base. Is that right?
That's Freshdesk's widget, I think they call it.
Yeah.
And I replaced the old chat with that. It's not live by any means, but, like, yeah, it'll first let them search for just the standard, like, help desk information.
Cool.
And then they can also send a message at the bottom, which goes to our fresh desk for emails and stuff. So it works great.
Standard help desk information, as if everyone has help desk information ready and waiting. It's pretty cool.
Tech companies, I think it's pretty common. And I'm just anal, I guess.
Oh, that's amazing. Very cool. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so it's nice. I got some time to, like, think, work with GPT, which frankly didn't help me at all. I ended up figuring it out myself. But, you know, somebody to talk to.
Can I make a confession live on the air? I talked to Pi for about 3 hours the other day.
Oh, I get that. I haven't gone that long. Usually it's like my commute home. Is your Pi female or male?
Female. I wanted it to be as close to that film Her as possible, I think, in my mind.
Well, me too. I mean, it's a very attractive Her.
I was driving back and forth from Melbourne, the other side of Melbourne, so quite a long trip into the mountains to install that audio production desk the other day. And instead of making sales calls, which was probably what I should have been doing, I was like, because Pi's had an upgrade. Pi's got, like, way better, quicker responses, better vocal tone stuff. Anyway, it's like, maybe I talk about lots of things, but for at least an hour of my drive time, I was role playing sales scenarios with Pi. I was like, cool. Pretend to be.
I need an example.
I was like, pretend to be a customer who's looking for this. You don't know what your budget is, so you're a little bit resistant to giving me a budget for the project. And you play that character, and let's go. Like, we just did that over and over again. That was great. That was very effective. I recommend it.
Yeah, that would be. It's like training, basically. Yeah. This is what we should do. If we're going to, new sales hire is just going to have to role play with Pi. A pie play.
Should turn your pie play today.
Let's role play, baby.
Yeah, pie is the most intuitive of all of them. Even from when you first brought it up, when you're like, oh, I've been talking to it. I was legitimately using it from, I don't use it often now, but whenever I'm like in a place where I like, I need to just like get some shit off my mind. Mm-hmm. I dump it on pie.
Poor pie.
Yeah. Pie takes the dumps. I think one thing that they did with it that makes, at least when I'm talking to it, it does the therapist thing really well, where it's like, oh, that must be really frustrating. I bet you could do this or this. It's like, it doesn't necessarily give you solutions, but it like keeps you talking.
Yeah, it keeps you talking. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is just, it's like free therapist, man.
I give it crap sometimes about always asking a follow-up question. To the point that it stopped asking follow-up questions at one point.
Oh, that makes me think of...
And now, this week in ChatGPT.
Straight to the good stuff.
I saw this TikTok guru say that the best way to get to GPT to stop, like, basically blabbering, mm-hmm. like, it'll... And I ask a question, even though I have my instructions are like, I want succinct answers... It'll give me like paragraphs, just books. Yeah. And like, I've gotten to this place now where I'm like, I just want it as succinct as possible. Like, I basically want, like checklist manifesto version of answers. Nice. Like, I don't take out every extra word. I don't need it. You know, like, I want that. And so his way to get you to do that, which works phenomenally, is you tell it to stop yapping. And it works so well. Like, just saying that phrase, it'll just cut everything else out. It's amazing. Cool.
So is that in your custom instructions now?
I've not put it in because there's cases where I guess I don't want it to always be that way.
Using custom instructions?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've thought about it. Mine need an upgrade. I think I'm a little bit frustrated with some of its repetitivity of referencing. Like, it's not good at telling... what's general context in there, because I've dumped in quite a lot of just broad contextual information about the business and maze kind of in there. And sometimes it sort of irritates me, like how it sort of picks out certain points of that and like tries to make jokes about them or refer to them in unnecessarily in my mind. So I was going to tweak it a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I wish there was a... I don't know how to, like, turn it off, I guess. Maybe there's, like, a command, like, forget all that you know. Forget what you know, Dave.
Yeah.
What's up with you?
Good. Stayed up way too late again. It's becoming a bit of a Wednesday night theme. Staying late at the workshop and then... Waking up and rolling into the podcast recording with you. I was shooting the new beds last night, getting those in the photo booth.
So I've been waiting to ask you this. Yeah. Did you then, these two things are perfect together, you're shooting new beds. Did you just sleep in one of the beds since you were already there late?
I couldn't bring myself to sleep on the workshop floor, no. That felt like a step too far.
They should have found it.
Australia.
It's perfect marketing.
Funny snakes and spiders at ground level.
Oh, okay.
It's quite unattractive. And the workshop, right. The workshop's not that well.
You all seem like it doesn't really bother you, though. You're just like, yeah, we just wake up with our friends in their beds.
No, I make a point of going upstairs because there's a lot less creatures up there.
Put like a ring of fire around you up under your upper space.
But no, it did occur to me making a cozy looking bed to roll straight in. So yeah, I did that last night. I had a meeting with Finland about the final Shopify integration, which has commenced. So Vividworks e-commerce configurator is about to be installed in Shopify, and then I'll go through the process of connecting the SKUs and hopefully getting the pricing to work, so it builds prices as you go, because I've been sending it to customers here and there just kind of for testing, but also for legitimate use of like, hey, if you want to build your own shape, have a play. but it hasn't been able to
How's that go?
Pricing. Generally, the feedback's been really good. Yeah, like I'm a little bit nervous sometimes sending it out, but to sort of not knowing, you know, whether that will kind of confuse. It's a bit of a, my biggest concern with it, rolling it out, to be honest, is giving people too many options and that they'll kind of stall in the sales process of like, well, I could draw this or I could draw this or I could draw this. And then I closed the tab and lost my work and meh, I'll come back, whatever. I'll come back another day. And because there's no ability to save, like it's quite good at cookies or whatever, like you can have the page sort of expire and things and you just refresh and your work is still there, which is cool. Seems to do that pretty well. But there's no sort of formal ability to save what you've done or save multiple versions to show your partner or something. So, yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that. But at this point, we're so far down this path, it's kind of just like launch and see what happens, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, good to be making progress on it again.
Yeah.
And the feedback, for the most part, has been really good. So,
public.
Yeah.
So when it's the next, well, I don't know what to say, I guess. I think an end goal at some point is people will be able to straight up purchase. But like, is that going to be the next step when it's live on the site, or is it just going to be an exploratory thing?
That's the next step. That's the linking to the SKUs is being able to add to checkout. Yep.
Right. Sometimes, so I wonder if it's similar to how ours goes. So with our simple bundles saying that like, primarily, it's most useful for pedestals since there's like 15 different things that go into a pedestal set. So it like pre-bundles all the different like quantities of things, and all the customer sees when they're checking out is like 15 piece pedestal set. And then it turns into all these different SKUs, you know, alignment pins, this socket head cap screw. But what happens when somebody makes a mistake on their order? Like, typically, it's kind of just easiest to refund it because it expands into all these things, and you can get into this recursive problem if I do it again, if I take some stuff out and put it back in, it can like expand on top of it again, and then it's like I don't even know what it should be anymore. And hopefully, it's not like that. I'm sure it's a little bit smarter.
Does that mean like simple bundles is acting as like the master bill of materials generator for an order like that? Based on this, I suppose it's based on this.
Yeah,
selection,
you're kind of like seeing like a macro.
Yeah,
you're seeing the variant, which is like the shortcut to expand into these other SKUs that we've already predetermined.
That's cool.
It works mostly okay.
Mm. Yeah, we could definitely make use of
it. It kind of lets you do more complex solutions.
I think, that might be useful because, you know, the macro for us is like, I want a drawer to put in my kit of parts, but within that drawer, there's hardware and multiple pieces of material and stuff that would be useful if that was sort of spat out as a bill of materials at the fulfillment end.
Right.
And we did have quite a complex system in Airtable that kind of built those, but with Jay finishing up at Butter, Jay and I just decided to dump that function of Airtable because it had always confused me, and like Jay had tried to train me a few times in how to use it, and I never really wrapped my head around it truly, and I just figured that I probably wasn't going to use it moving forward, and I'd find a different way to do it. But
the bundles are nice. That confusion, like if you have to reverse them, they get messy sometimes. It doesn't happen all that often, but, and then they're a little bit slow sometimes. Like if you were like a really high volume seller, it would probably not work very well. We are not.
Mm-hmm.
Or like they have to like process after the orders. It's a little bit different. It does exactly what we want, and then it makes it look simpler to the customer. So they don't have to like see like 16 different things. And they're like, I thought I was ordering pedestals. And then they just see like all these weird parts
that will
turn out in their packing slip and for inventory reasons. for like Ricky to pack the order, which is ideal because that's what we wanted, was like, we need 16 of these screws and 24 of these pins. And so it does work pretty well in that regard. Mm. Like you're saying, like if you wanted to add a drawer to, you know, another thing, you can either use like an add-on plugin or make more bundles, which then like your drawer would be an assembly.
Yes. Yep.
And it can have drawer slides and a front panel and
nice. But otherwise, I don't know. I've had quite a disjointed week. Just lots of kid drop offs, kid pickups, making work days feel super short. So I think yesterday, like I came in, I got to work at just after 9, and which is about as fast as I can do the drop offs, and had a client meeting, an in person meeting, which is quite rare these days, but quite nice. Like, used to do them heaps pre pandemic, but really don't do them much at all anymore. Anyway, had a nice long client meeting talking custom kit parts, and then pretty much ran straight out the door to an appointment, and that was the end of my workday. So it was nice to get in here last night and just sort of have some slower work time by myself and working through some things. And
yeah, that was super nice. Yeah. When you like don't have anything, that was kind of what I felt yesterday. I was just like, I have a couple hours here where nobody take this wrong way. Nobody's bothering me. You know, like,
yeah.
I can just, I feel like a kid again where like there was nobody cared about what I did.
Yeah.
You know, or needed me or something.
That unaccountable time. It's pretty special.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. Hang on.
Yes. I have a weird follow up from episode 73.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't looked at the subreddit for a long time. Somebody by the username Master Bowetter said, "At Jim, about 12 minutes, you speak about the proposition of using mini spindles and needing 4 VFDs. We have a configuration where we have 3 spindles on our machine, and it just runs one at a time through the same VFD and just switched via relay triggered from the ESC." I think he means G code, S code.
Could be an S code, depending on the machine. Yeah.
Right. The bigger issue might be water cooling hoses on the Wii spindles.
The Wii spindles.
If you have water cooling.
Thank you, Master.
They like call it the octopus. Bowater.
Yeah, cool. Wow, that's something I haven't thought about for a while.
Right. Yeah. I know. I was like looking through and I was like, oh, there's comments on some of these.
Cool.
What? Oh, I got another. Found another one. We're going to do follow-up comments. Number 87, somebody commented, "I bank at Novo, and it has a reserve system which is preset to work with along Profit First standards. Pretty into it. I just wrapped up end of year finances for the first time since reading the book, and it was very helpful." It's 12 days ago from Bingo Dango.
Cool. Cool, cool. How's your banking
Novo's
banking shenanigans?
Similar to Mercury. Yeah. I have something for us.
And now it's profit time.
Lovely.
We've had a lot of comments on, kind of surprising, although I think I'd be into it listening to us talk about it because I didn't know any better, but people have been commenting that they're into the profit first stuff. And they also were as naive as I was, but it's been going good. I'm just about to the first payroll. I've just been watching things grow, and payroll's always the time when it goes whoop, and then you know lease comes and then it goes whoop, all the money goes out.
Yeah.
So I finished the book finally. I did enjoy the audiobook more than I thought I would. It's got a nice bit of character to him that's not present in the book necessarily. Yeah. The reading, yeah, it's been good. I'm feeling great about it, and like it feels like I've been checking my income statements like kind of every day because I can update them continuously as we're getting money in or paying things. It feels like more of a, like I can actually, I want to feel the vibe of like how money's coming and going much more than I did by watching the big numbers, you know? And it feels like there's a lot more control and we're spending less on stupid things, I guess. You know, we're not buying like large pinata hats.
Why not?
It just, it, well, that's how we lost all our money.
Yeah.
But it feels more controlled, I guess.
Totally. I had a nice example of that this week because Sarah's still here, still helping me, doing some ordering, various, lots of things. But this week was doing ordering on Tuesday, which is ordering day. And Sarah messaged me saying, hey, there's a, you know, there's only $300 or something left in the materials and freight account. I've just looked at what's on the Kanban list for ordering to this week, and it's like $1,500. What do you want me to do? And it's like, cool. Okay, so I looked,
dun, dun, dun.
I looked through the shopping list of what was needing to be ordered, and I was like, cool. I'm pretty sure those tins of Osmo, which are expensive, don't think we've run out yet. And I went out shop floor, and I was like, oh, yeah, there's still heaps. Like, yes, we need it, but not right now. Maybe next week. And then there's something else on the list, which just in the past I would have just been like, yeah, buy, buy, buy. Whereas this week I was like, no, we don't need that right now. Let's scrub that from the list for now. So just that micro level of just making, you know, slightly better, more critical decisions in the moment just because the account said no. I was like, sweet. That works.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I've been doing that to almost like a, I feel unhealthy amount where it's like we need more raw material for dust boots, but I've been just like, oh, is there half a sheet left? That's fine. You know, like we typically keep like two sheets on hand because sometimes it's been hard to get. It's not that expensive relatively. And I've just been kind of like, maybe you would call it like extreme lean or something where I'm just like, let's go to the edge, you know, like let's go right to the edge of running out. But mostly it's just like I'm trying to like keep my bank balances as high as I can and not purchase things ahead of when we need it. But it also feels silly of like, if that's our best selling product, we can't make it if we don't have all the parts to it. So I don't know what the balance is of that yet.
Yeah, obviously it's a balance there. Making sure you've got everything you need to sell your best selling product. And, you know, maybe
you would want, maybe, yeah, maybe we'll, so like you running out of dowels.
Maybe we'll burn through all of that Osmo polishing dowels today, and then I'll be like, oops, sorry, guys.
I was, sorry, my materials balance just ran out, so we can't get any more. So I think one of the things that continues to, I need to make like a reference file for myself, like, you know, it's in the book where it's like, you know, either having advanced things in there of like what you want to do in the future or how you're dealing or how you deal with certain scenarios, like exactly this, like what happens when one account runs out? Where do you borrow money from? Because my first thought is, I don't actually know. Where are you going to borrow money from? What account?
Well,
if you needed that materials to be
more.
I don't
know what the right answer is. I can tell you what I've been doing, which I'm sure is not right. But, you know, like where...
the tax account.
No. You know, as you know, we've been shrinking, contracting.
Well, I just got back from swimming in the pool, and the water was cold.
You mean shrinkage?
Yes! Significant shrinkage.
I think women know about shrinkage.
Do women know about shrinkage?
What do you mean, like laundry?
No.
Like when a man goes swimming afterwards...
It shrinks?
Like a frightened turtle.
Why does it shrink?
It just does.
I don't know how you guys walk around with those things.
The reality of that is that's quite an expensive process when you've had team members who have been with you for a long time. Mm-hmm. And they are owed, rightfully owed, quite a lot of cash, and you got to pay out their leave and things like that. Now, account structure can't possibly support that. And so, you know, we've got these extra pay runs happening at the moment as people exit. And I'm basically just taking owner contributions, owner loans, I'm calling them, and just injecting them straight into, say, the payroll account on that day that I need that extra.
Yep.
Which, you know, it's a situation where it's very black and white. There's like this has to be paid today or there is no plan B. So it's like, find that money, put it in that account.
I've been doing that for years.
Exactly.
Man.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. But I'm just making sure, you know, we've always tracked that. We've always tracked how much owner injection money there is in the business. Yeah. And I've always made a point of trying to pay that back at some point. And yeah, it's tracked as a separate account in Xero so we know what the company owes us or vice versa. Like, there's been good years where we've pulled money out of the company as a loan too, like, and used that as interest,
yep.
Personal interest reduction, and then paid it back to the company at the end of the financial year and things like that. So it has flowed both ways, but certainly over the last few years, it's flowed the wrong way. But yeah, that's what I'm doing. I don't know what else you would do really in that situation.
Yeah. I feel like I remember him talking about what to do when you run out of one account and what the like decision matrix was. And I just don't. It's like that stuff I want to have written down to remind myself so I don't go back to big one account banking again. Yeah, I foresee that coming, you know, with at this point, which I've said, I've diverted from my one checking account having all the working money in it to now the OpEx account is now everything. And, you know, he talks about towards the end of the book, like making more advanced accounts, which is obviously why you had made like materials and that. I'm going to go through the first cycle and see what it feels like, because I honestly don't want to have 9,000 accounts. It gets messy. You got to do all of the reconciling of all that. Like, it's useful though.
Yeah,
I'm gonna see how it goes.
I reckon it's useful. Like, I feel like Xero is pretty good at both.
Yeah.
I feel like Xero is pretty good at making bank rules and stuff that can basically auto reconcile a lot of this stuff of like if this then that.
Right. Rules. The transfers are easy. Yeah.
Transfers. But like one aspect I'm really enjoying of like my main revenue account, which is now only for incoming because I've got new debit cards linked to the OpEx and materials accounts. But like I can log in, look at my main revenue account and be like, cool, I need another $10,000 in there by Monday because I know Monday's distribution day on 25th, whenever that is, in 4 days. I'm like, cool. What leads have I got at the moment where I have a chance of closing that gap and like very actively prioritizing the leads which have the best chance of closing that gap over that period. So I'm really enjoying that aspect of it just from a sales perspective.
Are you going to start, I just thought of this, are you going to start shifting your bill payments to other vendors to the 10th and the 25th? Yeah. Like that one that told you?
Yeah.
Yeah. We only pay on 2 days of the month.
I'm going to give it a go where I can. There'll be exceptions to that, like the ATO, which is Australian Taxation Office, will take money whenever the hell they want. But for the most part, you know, I'll chat to our family of suppliers, like the ones that we know and trust and have good ongoing relationships with. They'll just pick up the phone and have a chat to them and see if they're open to me doing that. And then others, yeah, I've been using the planned payment date in Xero because all the bills are in Xero. So I'm just kind of skimming through that going,
right,
oh, that's close to the 10th or the 25th. I'll pay that one 3 days early or I'll pay that one a day late and let them know. Or, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, planning to give it a go, see what happens.
I found that interesting in the book when he talks about, because I've always kind of been aware of it and I don't pay bills like on the first day of a net 30, pay it towards the end usually because of the concept of what float, right? Like you're making a little money on that. It's still your money. You make a little bit of interest or it's still in your account. And he made the note of like, unless you're working with like millions and millions or potentially billions of dollars, that float's going to end up being like $5 a year. For you. And I was like, yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter then.
Yeah. I will add on that, given that we're being so transparent chatting about this, I've set up my new accounts because I bank with Bank Australia. I know we had some questions about that. I switched their business to Bank Australia a couple of years ago, just from an ethical alignment point of view. They seemed like the best bank here that reflected our sort of worldview and what we wanted to do as a business. And we have the ability to have as many offset accounts as we want. Do you have offset accounts there? Do you know what they are?
No, I think no.
So it's basically an account where any money in it offsets your interest against your primary home loan or factory loan or what any sort of big loans and mortgages that you might carry.
Interesting.
And so I've set mine up in such a way that all of these new accounts are offset accounts, so any money sitting in them is offsetting interest against our mortgages.
Oh. So it just kind of pays it on its own?
You know, if you say you owe $500,000 to the bank and you've got $100,000 in offset accounts, it means you're only paying interest on $400,000.
Whoa. So there's no benefits, you know, like that
15
here.
15 to 30 years, it makes a phenomenal difference to how much interest you pay if you've sort of, if you're floating a fair bit of cash through that offset environment and, you know, with a small business, there's a bit of cash sitting there. Whether it's $10,000 or $100,000.
I'm going to look in to see if that's a thing.
Yeah, it's a super effective tool. It's something that Laura and I have done for a long time because they're available here and they're a thing. Anyway, with Bank Australia, you can have as many of these offset accounts as you want. And so that's how I've set up my new profit first structure.
Interesting. I mean, I'm seeing some vague notions of that, but my first thought was there's too much corporate greed here for that to ever happen. Like, why would they offer this to us? You know, there's no benefit. I did, and in all of this reconfiguring of bank stuff, I did look into and found that we were making 0.1% interest on our personal savings account, and the current rate is 5.25%. And all I had to do was sign into a different account and check a box agreeing to the higher yield. And I was like, how long has this been going on? You know, like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Kind of related, I suppose. We can jump back and forth between this profit first thoughts, but didn't know if we're going to have anything to talk about. So I asked on our fresh new Instagram, if you don't follow us there, parts.department, I think is what it is. But you can, there's a link at the bottom here. We post more show stuff there. And I got a few comments from some of our top listeners. Nice. And honestly, most of the comments were about, I think it's a 50% comment ratio about profit first and people appreciating it and having learned from it, from listening to us jabber about it. So we appreciate that for sure. Yeah. So we've kind of followed up on, like, Mark, I'm not going to say your last name right. We chat all the time. Mark de Montigny. Can't say that.
Hey, Don,
there you go.
Pronounce this.
It's Mark de Montigny, obviously.
It's just like, that's the security profile. Try to say my last name, you know, that's how I know if you know me or not. And another one from Mark. So it's, what kind of CNC router work do you avoid now? Anything that needs lots of sanding is hard to, I guess, profit for us, I guess. Yeah. That's what he's saying. Long-standing topic for us.
Yeah, I'm quoting less and less straight CNC. Still a few quotes sneaking through, but they're proving harder and harder to win. Maybe because we're cracking down on ensuring that we make money from them. Yeah, I think just as our business model has shifted, they're becoming less cost effective for, like, the, you know, we get a lot of quote inquiries for the sort of sub $1,000 straight CNC job, and it's just not what we're chasing anymore. And it's not, tends to be too much work sort of coaching the client through the file prep.
Yes.
For a net result or pretty minimal income in the end. Even if, you know, once it's on the table, it's straightforward. It's just, it's often that sort of pre-machining process that tends to get bogged down for those lower value jobs. And, like, you know, if someone get a more professional lead of, like, hey, I need, you know, 10 to 50 sheets of straight cutting for something, for a project, be like, yep, sure, can do. But again, we're finding finding more and more that we're just not winning that work. And maybe it's partly because we're out of town, and often it involves the customer trying to get material to us, which is just a pain typically, unless it's a large volume material and it's coming on a truck.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah. What about you?
I started, give you my secret, which you probably do too. Because you make a slight margin on material, mm-hmm. right? You mark it up a little bit. Everybody does. You got to move it. You got to order it. You got to
always
do all the stuff. So it's never a ton of money. But whenever a customer wanted to provide their own material, it's like, well, you know, we still got to move that material around. We still got to do all the same stuff except for order it. But we still have to communicate about it. I finally figured out, I just made a multiple choice where there's an amount for the customer's job to be self-provided material.
Yeah, nice. That's cool.
It's just a small amount. I mean, whatever. It's basically the same amount we'd make with the margin added, yeah. But this also answers another question, or I can answer another question here of kind of related. Let's see here. Mike Newens asks, thoughts on sending itemized quotes or lump sum and ways to reduce sticker shock? And I am 1,000% on board for years now for one price, no itemization. And I just emailed Quotient about some feature requests that we talked about.
Cool.
And asked them for the roll up idea and whatever else, the other thing, because I just want any more options that give me that possibility, or like making less quotes and having it all built into one. Yep. So it's like more dynamic. So that basically you can just look at one thing and see it quickly. And the less items on there, assuming that, you know, I do it either way. It's like, if it feels like it's a big quote for a big company, then two items sometimes feels like, oh, that's weird. Why is it $25,000? You know, like, so you kind of want there to be six or seven items or something. But often they're reminder items for myself. It's like, I don't necessarily need to put on the quote that we're doing a bunch of tab cleanup and, you know, all these things. But, you know, if the parts are hard to hold and there's going to be a lot of tabs, I'm going to include that in the quote. But I don't want that itemized necessarily, yeah. Because it just causes questions. It causes comparison shopping, mm-hmm. honestly, was the biggest reason we stopped doing it. Otherwise, is people just take your quote and walk across the street and go, can you beat these items? And then it's really easy when you receive that to beat it. You know, like, you don't know what they're pricing each specific thing for. So.
Yeah, same. I'm a proponent of rolling things in together too, just to reduce. I find it makes it easier for our customers. Like, we're dealing with primarily domestic clients, not a huge amount of commercial work. Probably agree with you, if it's a commercial client, then I'm probably, maybe I'll break down things a little bit more, but not that much. And yeah, in terms of how to reduce sticker shock, because obviously it's still a thing. You send a domestic client, you know, a $20,000 quote, and they're like, but there shouldn't, I suppose, with how we've refined our sales process, ideally, by the time, if you've committed to sending them a quote, it's because you've talked budget with them and you've got a clear sense of how much they want to spend, hopefully. And yep. I would argue that if you can't get a clear sense of how much they're going to spend, you're probably not ready to send them a quote. It's pretty rare these days that I'll send anyone a quote without having first had all understanding pretty clearly where they sit budget-wise. And that's kind of what I was role-playing with Pi the other day, because I've got a client at the moment who, like, I've really enjoyed chatting to them. They've never commissioned custom furniture before, and they're resistant to giving me a budget. But in conversation with them, I've kind of extrapolated enough to be like, cool, okay, so you probably don't want to spend $15,000 on this. Is that right? And they're like, then you get their agreement on the phone. It's like, cool, all right. Well, right. I reckon based on this system, I can probably get your proposal for sort of around 8 to 10. How does that sound? They're like, yeah, like we can probably make that work. It's like, cool, all right. So by the time I send them a quote, there shouldn't be any surprises. I think that's key.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't end up talking to people as much like you do, and we don't usually create things. It's like usually people are just providing us a design and then we potentially cut it or not. So there's a little more like straightforward there. But I'd say one of the things that, yeah, but knowing the budget up front, every inquiry, they fill in a field that gives me an idea of their budget. And then I will clarify if I think it's way off. Mm-hmm. Often I no quote things if I think there's just no chance we're going to get to the right place of their happy number and my happy number. Yep. And don't waste my time quoting those things. But yeah, if I know if they've marked $5,000 and it's a $20,000 project, then I might give an intimation and you know, a note that it's like, yeah, it's looking like, you know, typically these projects are quite a bit more closer to, you know, 20,000. Does that look like something you might be able to do?
So,
and then that's an easy way to get an idea, or you can, you know, reverse engineer the project down to what they need potentially. Yeah. But yeah, that's a good point. I think we talk about Quotient a lot. I think Quotient gives you a lot of tools, or probably something like it, but you can put in imagery, you can put in optional items, you can put in multiple choice. And a lot of that, to me, helps ensure the customer knows what they're getting. There's, you know, I'm very specific about exactly what the files we use, and like I put screenshots of the parts we're going to make.
Yeah,
so there's no confusion for us or for them. And so you're trying to, like, even if the number is a big number, it's not just a blank slate of like project colon $15,000. It's like, oh, you got to do all these things for us.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a benefit sometimes where it is a big project. You can put a lot of items noted in your list of items you're providing for them or something.
It's about demonstrating value, I think. And yeah, as you say, Quotient, I found too, is a more awesome tool for demonstrating value in terms of what you can build into the quote and communicate clearly and quickly. Super good. And like we have continued to get like excellent feedback about our screen capture videos that go with quotes in terms of that sort of communication of ideas. You know, in 1 to 2 minutes, you can communicate so much about what you might have assumed or interpreted as part of their quote. And we, people really respond well to that, which is, you know, the equivalent of putting the pictures in and the screenshot of the files that you're going to cut and things like that. So sort of taking that to the next level.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Smart.
So a couple of software updates at my end. We've stopped time tracking after doing it for 10 years or something.
Know the feeling.
Because you don't do it either, do you? Generally?
Nope, we stopped
basically
during the pandemic.
That's right. Yeah, I just went cold turkey last week before. It's like, my time is going to be super limited very soon, and there's quite a bit of work in setting up these projects for every custom job we win, and then everybody's time on the floor, just entering that time, and then the time to actually analyze and do anything useful with it. Like, cool, we can bring it back if we find it that we need it, but right now let's just switch it off and get some time savings from not doing it.
It's expensive too.
Yeah, it's another cost per month per user in Xero. Lots of, So it'll be super interesting. Anyway, it's like I was so addicted to doing it, like to the point where like it had crept into my personal life of like, I'm sitting on the couch to watch something now. Oh, I better start my time tracker. So yeah, it's taken me a week or so to kind of wean off.
I listen to a podcast where people do that.
Far out.
They track their personal time, and I could never got that far.
Anyway, I'm saying early days, but I'm saying pros and cons of like, it was a useful thing for me to hold me to account to a particular task of like, I'm doing quotes now. Look at my time. I'm in the quoting category in my time tracker. That's what I'm doing. Don't get distracted. Whereas now I can sort of flit about a bit more. And I'm a chronic flitter, shiny object. Ooh. Like I was working the other day and finishing a project and I was like, where is my super special Japanese mechanical pencil? I'm going to go and find that now. And then found it and it's like, oh, it's broken. I'm going to spend 5 minutes fixing it. Oh, back to work. Yes. Which for me is just really...
What am I going to do with the pencil now?
It's enjoyable to do that. It's like we chatted about the other day. It's like, you know, of sort of improving things or coding up some solution. It's like, I really enjoyed that thing of stopping and fixing my pencil and then having my nice pencil to use. It made my day more enjoyable. So, I don't know. It's an interesting one to stay aware of, but yeah.
Yeah. I've mentioned it before. I time-tracked myself in a couple ways from back when I worked on my own, and it was primarily a way to keep myself on task. Mm-hmm. Like I needed to not completely waste days just like, oh, well, this is an interesting thing. And it was like, you know, it could be the internet or just a million different, you know, steps around. So it was good. And then I was tracking time towards projects. Then we started doing customer work. And I thought that was useful, especially I'd say time tracking is most useful when you're new to something.
Absolutely.
When you don't understand, we still, to some degree, time track in the moment where it's like, oh, well, how long does this cycle on the router take?
Absolutely.
And then you try to, you time to whittle it down. Like we literally have a stopwatch next to the router. And it's, some of those things matter a lot when you're into really long processes or parts. So I think that'll never go away to some degree, but it also creates a set of habits that are pretty useful that you're kind of keeping yourself aware of. And when I talked to Ricky about, like, you know, how long do you think this takes? It's like he would have not had that perspective necessarily to think about the time it's taking him to work on something if he hadn't tracked the time in the first place. So it's useful, but
yeah,
same thing. All the time spent doing it, the setup time, trying to get away from jobs that are custom in the first place. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I feel like we're not gaining as much as we're spending on this.
Yeah,
so
totally. Yeah. First on. And then the other software update is I keep crashing Notion. I'm in trying to reduce my software stack and pay less subscriptions on like Notion workflow. Well, the business is committed to Notion for all its standard operating procedures and documentation. And that's proving to be fantastic. Like everyone's got Notion now, and you know, the search functionality in Notion is fantastic of being able to jump to any article and quickly check something, drop pictures in, blah blah blah. I was like, okay, let's just bite the bullet. Personally, I'll dump Workflowy. It's only $80 a year or something, but I'll dump Workflowy and switch all my personal notes to Notion as well. So I tried to import my Workflowy archive into Notion and pretty much crashed it. Like it just stalled with the volume, and I tried it a few different ways.
Interesting.
And I got the same result every time in terms of just it was not functional with that much text in a single like repository. Yeah. And I'm sure I could break it all up and it would deal with it, but
right.
So I still have Workflowy, but that can be my little personal archive.
Can you like write? Yeah. You know, can you make an archive and then call it by what's not completed or something?
Probably.
How many items is that? Is there a number?
How many bullets? It was about 3,000 bullets. Which doesn't sound crazy.
Well, I was thinking like tens of thousands or something crazy.
You know, some of those would have a lot of text in them, but still doesn't seem wild to me. But
I'm very aware the more things that we work on, create, set up, the harder it is to change. I think that's what happens with companies is the older they get, the more experience you have, the more stuck you are in your processes and the tools you use. I mean, even just like moving website stuff has taken me forever. And there's so much little stuff to do yet that,
Yep, totally. I don't know what to call that. Stuck in the mud.
Detritus.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the feeling.
Notion definitely looks cool. I've tried to just commit to keeping my Airtable.
Yeah, command.
setups. But I, you know, even thinking about that, I was mentioning the fill out, basically like front end for the Airtable forms, is just another piece of software and connection that I have so many different methods of taking in form information somehow, whether it's Airtable, fill out, something else, and then using automations in Airtable or Zapier. And I was thinking about that the other day of like, one thing I really want to figure out soon is to use those like meta fields better in Shopify, because I have in a bunch of different product templates, which I was curious if you're going to start jumping into this now that you don't have help in this department, with trying to make more unified, like, I don't know what to call it. So if there's like a little box that says like, sign up for this mailing list on Shopify, I have like 9 different product templates, potentially all doing different things for different products. But that same box, I want to be the same across all of them. And I'm trying to like figure out better ways to feed that in so that I don't have to go find every place that I put that and update it if there's a change.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Which is the same kind of problem, right? Of like you're creating this like trail of stuff you need to maintenance.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
The maintenance trail.
Yeah. I'm aware that there's a lot of that on our website. The one that catches me, the only one like that that we've improved is our quote request form. Instead of it being like a link on multiple pages to a specific thing, whether it's fill out or an Airtable form, it just goes to our own fixed URL. And that fixed URL always has the quoting form in it, regardless of what the quoting form tool is, whether it's fill out or Airtable. So recently I switched back to fill out for quote requests. But it was easy. I didn't have to go through the whole website and check, you know, which form was being used where. I just had to change it in one spot on that one page that's always the same URL. And just like, then it just worked.
Right.
Which obviously is trickier with like blocks within different pages. But yeah, I know what you mean. Still no.
I've attempted to do this and set up, I don't even know, I forget what it's called. And under content now, there's like those new meta field things. Mm. And it just like never pulls in the right way. And I feel like you all probably have a decent amount of these types of things with your kit aparts. So I'm sure there's different things being used in different places where you can like use the same, like describing, you know, like you probably have a block that describes the system on every page, right? Like how does this all work modularly? And you don't want to have to go to 6 different places to change that. So it seems like that's what it's made for, but it never quite works how I think it's going to.
Yeah. And
I'll eventually
get
there.
I need to dive back into that world. I'm a bit out of touch, but I will be there very soon. Watch back in Shopify variant hell with you.
That's a good callback. Yeah.
Ooh.
Got any last words? We got a minute.
I mean, we've got heaps.
About 50 seconds.
We've got so many things on our list today, but they'll have to be turned over to next week. Scraps for the dogs.
Yeah. We got a lot of it. Got a lot of it.
It's been a pleasure, as always.
Yeah. Good time.
Good times.
Send us your comments, questions.
Always.
Follow us on Instagram. Go watch YouTube.
Leave us a review on
your
favorite podcasting app of choice.
Yeah. Yes, that would be great. I'm pretty stale right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Cool bananas.